Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. My guests this week are Dara Kelly from Chagas, Sarah McIntosh from the Irish Farmers Journal, Darren Carty, also from the Irish Farmers Journal, and my final guest will be Bernard Lennon, who is from Clonmel. First guest this morning is Dara Kelly from Chagas. And Dara is with me to talk about the breeding season. And as you all know, probably particularly dairy farmers in particular will know that the breeding season is just around the corner. And I'm going to be asking Dara, has he any tips for you, my listeners, with regard to breeding plans for 2024? First of all, good morning, Dara, and thanks for joining us.
All right, Jim. I'm very welcome to come on the show. Yeah, I suppose the time of year is pushing on now, and breeding or calving is beginning to wind up a small bit, and the pressure is off it, lads. So it's a good time to get a chance to sit down and think about what their plans are breeding wise are for 2024. And I suppose coming into April there, just speaking to farms there in the last couple of weeks, some have their straws ordered already, and more haven't. Okay, so I suppose it's a good opportunity to speak about it now. And I suppose, look, the objectives are really on the dairy side of the house. Anyways, you know, you're trying to produce a calf next spring. That's think about it genetically, it's superior to the calves that were born last year. Okay, so you're that mindset has to come back in, and sometimes that can go astray. And what we're looking for is productive cow, fertile cow. You know, we're paid on kilos of milk solids and fat and protein, and you know, A, B minus C. So we need to look at fat and protein percentages, and we need to also look at the volume. So the milk kilos, especially now that banding, we're in our second year of the dairy cow banding system. And we need to be mindful of that, and that we don't, if we're borderline, we don't drive ourselves into a higher band. Fertile cow, you know, we're looking for a 365-day calving interval on a cow. And if you look at your EBI reports, it's always a great place to start and see where your herd is at, especially now that your heifers have calved in and they're inside in the report. The fertility figure is the number one, if you ask my own opinion on it. It's absolute driver of profit in any dairy herd. So fertility is a big one you need to be watching. You do not want to go back on fertility. You need to either keep it where it's at, or you need to, if it's low, you need to up it in terms of the bulls that you're taking. Look, healthy cows, there's health trait there as well inside an EBI. You know, we're looking for cows that are going to last in the herd. You know, they're more able to deal with SCC, lameness issues, and especially TB is a particular one this year. And I'd be definitely advocating anyone that's picking bulls for breeding replacements that they look at the health trait and they try to bring that up, ideally in double figures if they can, but at least on at minimum €5 on an individual bull if they're picking a bull. So that's, you know, the TB trait is built into the health trait on EBI, and it's, you can breed for more resistant type animals, okay? And that's a particular one in Tipperary. I suppose to move on a little bit, that's on the outside. On the bull side, I'd be saying, look, If you're looking at any catalogues, and most of them are out now at this stage, individual bulls, you know, as I said earlier, you need to be, whatever groups of animals or cows that you're picking out for breeding, you need to look at those animals. Hopefully they're the best in your herd. You know, you're using your milk records to look at production, what they've done, and you're looking at the EBI to make sure they have fertility and milk and health and all those traits are where you want them. So to pick the bulls, you need to be using bulls that are higher than those figures, okay? Right. So just for example, if you're using a team of dairy bulls, you know, the average for the team needs to be €130 and fertility. Milk is €100 at least. Health an average of €5. Carbon is positive, and maintenance somewhere between €10 and €20, depending on the type of cow you have. So, and the big point there I'd have to stress is our, the more we have in our team of bulls, the more we've de-risked. If one particular bull doesn't turn out to do what it says it does, at least we have a good few other bulls and we're using them evenly across the herd. And that's a really important point, that we're not relying on maybe two or three straws for the whole herd, that we've a team of bulls, you know, depending on the 100-cow herd that you have. You'd want to be picking definitely 6, 7, 8 straws across that herd and use them evenly, okay? Just to go back for a second on the fat and protein part, you know, using the milk records is a huge one. You can really delve into looking at, say, you can pick a figure, if your top cows, top 20% of the cows were doing whatever, we'll say 500 kilos of solids, you can really then pick out which cows in the herd are doing that. And you can pick a figure for your heifers or the first lactation ones or the second lactation cows in the herd. And really, that genetic gain that you're going to get by doing that, by using the milk records, is a huge advantage. It really speeds up the thing. So yeah, that's on the I suppose the dairy breeding side.
But Dara, before we go away from that, what should the farmer be looking for when he's picking replacement heifers?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing is on EBI. I'd be looking at their EBI report. I'd be looking at their fat and protein percent PTAs. Would be one of the first things I'd be looking at. I'd be looking then at also the fertility figure that's in them.
Right.
So if you want to get out there individually, if you have, say, a batch of 20, 30 heifers, you need to get out their individual EBI reports and see where they are in fertility and on the milk traits, okay?
Right.
And then you're looking at things like the maintenance figure that they have. You're looking at the health that's under EBI as well. Mm-hmm. And you're also looking at the milk kilos as well. So fat protein percent, the volume, which is milk kilos, and then you're looking at fertility. And after that, then I suppose it's preference. There, you know, if they came out of a cow that you know that did well in previous lactations and that kind of thing, it's down to preference there. The other point I'd be stressing is that they have to be early calving. Like, no real point in picking a heifer there that's an April, May calf, or that's out the window now at this stage. So they have to be early calving, okay?
Right.
So that goes back to calving day then.
Go back to calving day. So, okay, I cut across you there. You were going to talk a bit about the beef side of the herd?
Yeah, so look, we have this new index. Well, it's not new, but it's there for the last couple of years, but it's beginning to pick up wind now at this stage. So there's the DBI index, some of you may have heard of it, and there's also another index which is to do with the commercial beef value for calves, okay? So there's one index is for picking beef bulls, which is the DBI one, and then you have the CBV index, and that's for your newborn calves, okay?
All right.
So it's start off, they're almost the same, but they're not the same.
Go on. Confuse us, keep going.
Confuse me, yeah. So anyways, to start off, look, DBI stands for the Dairy Beef Index, okay?
Yeah.
So the idea of it is that it's helping a dairy farm, dairy herd, pick bulls that's going to add value to calves, potentially in terms of slaughter weight, confirmation, that kind of thing. Basically, you have more saleable calves and higher quality beef animal from the dairy herd. That's the idea of it. And it's what it's lining up is that you'll have, there's no bulls on it that are going to cause real difficult calving or going to extend gestation length, okay? So it's suiting the breeder. Now, the other one is to look at the potential of as a young calf to produce beef. And so looking at terms of carcass weight, cremation and feed intake. So that's what CBV value is, okay?
Yeah.
And you'll see those as you're buying or whoever's buying calves through the mart, you'll see coming up in boards and marts the CBV value. And it's just to be familiar with that. And it's commercial beef value. So what that calf is going to leave you with by the time you bring it to slaughter, in terms of what it'll achieve in terms of the value of that carcass. So just like, for example, a very good figure for a Friesian type animal, say it could be a Friesian bull calf, mm-hmm. out of a black and white cow, like that could be plus €20, maybe plus €22 at CBV value. Right. Whereas maybe a dairy cross beef type calf, so an Angus cross or maybe a Hereford cross or even other beef breeds, they could be up in plus €80, plus €100. So what that's saying is they're going to leave an extra €100 in your pocket when that animal becomes or goes to the factory. So it's about improving the value of the calf. And as dairy farms going forward, we need to be, I suppose, because we need less dairy replacements, there's an opportunity to breed better beef animals for sale as calves. And that should shine through with the CBV value. So that's going to be a big thing going forward. In the next couple of years, especially when those animals begin to get processed through the beef side.
Okay, well, look at Dara, we're running out of time, but I know there are events coming up in Tipperary that you want to highlight.
Yeah, so there's actually, we have a lot on actually in the next week or so. So next week, anyway, it's the 27th of March, we're at a breeding farm walk on John Ryan's in Blue Lake, Gartnahoo. And look, we're reviewing the breeding strategy, picking cows, picking bulls for breeding, and DBI and the benefits of that. So that's happening the 27th of March at 11 a.m. in the morning. And there's also on the 5th of April, there's another event, and that is on the farm with John and Debbie Sheridan and Kilskehan, Borsali, Turles. And that's at also 11 o'clock in the morning. So that's our two events coming up there in the next while.
Okay, well, look at Dara. Thanks very much for that. That listener was Dara Kelly from Chagas, talking about the breeding season. And there at the end, he gave you two dates for your dairy. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Sarah McIntosh. And Sarah is with both the Irish Farmers Journal and the Country Living section of it as well. And in this week's journal, Sarah has two articles, and we're going to talk about them. Good morning, Sarah, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, Jim. Thanks very much for having me on.
Okay. Now, on the journal this week, Sarah, you have a piece about falling numbers with regard to CAO applications for agriculture.
Yeah, so the Central Applications Office, the CAO, have released their data for 2024. Of course, this is likely to change due to the change of mine facility being open up until the 1st of July. But at the moment, as it stands, there's a 21% decline in the number of students selecting agriculture as their first preferences for the Level 8 courses. So that's quite a huge decline. There's also a decline of 14% selecting interdisciplinaries. So that's qualifications to do with ag. And then also on the level 7 and 6s, there is a 22% decrease of them selecting it as first preference.
Right. And have you any idea of why there's a 21% or less for some of those courses?
Yeah, we're not really sure what the reason why is. Like, there is a huge amount of courses available now. More courses have come on the line. There's also the apprenticeship options and level 6 and 7s. All of the technological universities are offering different ag science courses now as well. But yeah, the decline was seen in first preferences and as well as mentions. So that's throughout the whole CAO. It looks like quite a decline. It is quite worrying, but on the good news, it means for any students looking to do an ag science course, the points are going to be more achievable, as the points are likely to come down if that number stays as it is.
Because we have been looking at increase upon increase year on year for quite some time, I suppose there was always going to be a time when there would be a decrease.
Yeah, there was. And it's a funny one because there's so many opportunities in the sector at the moment. It is an employee's market, and most agricultural companies are crying out for workers. So we know that the demand is there in the employment side of things. So it's hard to pinpoint where the decline is coming from.
Now, you mentioned the level 6 and level 7, and primarily now they would be students who would be going into the agricultural colleges, primarily maybe to go back home onto their own farms or go and become a farm manager someplace.
And they're very broad. It depends as well. A lot of the level 7s, you can build it up to level 8 now as well, which is a great different route to go into. And also, I know I asked to have raised concerns into the declining number of students doing ag science for the Leaving Cert. So that's likely to have an impact as well.
Right. OK. And of course, knowing some students, and did have a few of them, my own children, you know, they tend to opt for subjects that are easy to get points in. And I suppose the one that has been easy to get points in recent years has been domestic science, as we used to call it, or whatever they call it, home science, or whatever they call it now, because I know my grandchildren will turn out to be very good cooks when they eventually have to go to college or go out into the world. I suppose that's...
Yeah, and I think for me especially, like, I'm from Dublin, I'm not from a direct farm, so I chose to do an ag science course too. Yeah. So it's about knowing what opportunities are out there and making sure students are informed and making that decision, I suppose.
Right, okay. So that's that one. The other article you have, which is equally as important, is on the same lines, of course, and that is ag tech. So what's happening in that field at the moment, Sarah?
Yeah, so I suppose in the last 5 years, we've all heard the word ag tech being used. It kind of refers to anything that makes farmers more productive. It's quite a broad definition, but it can be anything from a tool on the farm to artificial intelligence. And we know that farmers are working as hard as they can on farms, so we're going to have to see increased production, and especially with the sustainability targets. So, like, ag tech is going to be an essential component for hitting those sustainability targets and making farms more efficient as well. And it's not just on farm level that the opportunities are in the ag tech sector. There's huge opportunities for industry as well, because, you know, we're going to need people who can understand artificial intelligence and coding. And even in the higher food companies, we're seeing increased technologies coming in there to make production lines more efficient too.
The people listening to us this morning who are not into ag tech, can you give them a really good example of what ag tech is, so they will have a better understanding of, you know, why somebody decides to go into ag tech as part of their choice for a career?
Yeah, so a good example is the Herdwatch app. So I interviewed James Grevy in Herdwatch on that, and as many farmers will be aware of Herdwatch and know what the app is, it's to utilize your farm, it's to understand what inputs are coming in, it's to understand the financial aspect as well. So it's really making farmers more efficient, and it's helping them to look at their farm enterprise from a business perspective but also a production perspective as well. So really, most farmers are using technology on their farms, and so it really is just agricultural technology.
Right, okay. So as one scientist said to me one time, was trying to explain to me about the new tech that's out there, and he was talking about a piece of machinery, and he said, "Look at Jim, you have ag tech in your car. When you turn it on to cruise control, that's the new modern technology being used."
It's anything from a serrated edge on a shovel, to be honest, to artificial intelligence, you know. It's all being made, and it's all new designs coming in. And there's a big opportunity there from people from farming backgrounds, because a lot of these ag tech companies, the startups, they're from the cities a lot of the time. So there's huge opportunities for people who have that agricultural knowledge and that practical experience as well.
Talking about practical experience, and you're talking about knowledge, I suppose we have to look at some of the big ag manufacturers. A lot of their latest inventions have come from young people living in rural Ireland, for the need to make something on the farm a little bit easier and the work on the farm a little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even as far as transition year students, I met a group of them last week, and, mm-hmm. and they're working on just a bracket for a shovel, and to make that easier for farmers to hold up shovels in their yard. So, you know, it's these young people coming through with these fresh ideas that is driving the sector on and making the opportunities more prevalent, I think.
Okay, well, look at Sarah, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. And listeners, if you haven't already opened those pages in this week's journal, why not over the next few days, read both of Sarah's articles. And if you haven't bought the journal and you want to know more about it, go out and buy this week's journal. That, listeners, was Sarah McIntosh talking about the drop in numbers, or the decline in numbers on CAO applications, and about ag tech.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks very much.
Have a nice day now.
And you have a nice day. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Darren Carty from The Journal. And Darren has two pieces in The Journal of interest this week. So we're going to have a chat about them. Good morning, Darren. And thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim.
Now, Darren, let's look at the first of these articles that you have in The Journal. One that's very topical at the moment, particularly if the housewife is looking for a piece of lamb for Easter, or a rack of lamb for Easter. They're likely to be paying quite a hefty price for it in the butchers or one of the supermarkets.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a sheep farmer and to have lambs or hoggets or yaws to sell. As a farmer said to me this week, he was lambing, so it wasn't a great time with the weather. But anyone that has sheep to sell, prices are running anywhere from €1.50 a kilo to €2 a kilo higher. To put that in context for your listeners, about 40 to 50 euros higher for your typical, say, lamb or your hoggart carcass.
Right. And, you know, this is something that's very welcome, particularly for sheep farmers.
Definitely. Like, if we've seen all throughout 2023 and even 2022, that while prices were running at a higher level, they were eroded by input costs. So if we went back just very briefly to 2023, you look at the Chagas figures, they would have showed that your average sheep farmer would have done well to break even given where costs were last year, that the costs escalated that much. Since the turn of the year, we've seen prices rise by about €1.50 a kilo, which has brought sheep into, I suppose, maybe a position where they're leaving a good margin on lambs. There would have been purchased last back in the store lambs. They're leaving a good margin now for the buyers at all. So it's, I suppose, vital to keep a bit of optimism in the sector and to keep, I suppose, farmers in business.
Right. Easter is traditionally a time for lamb as far as the consumer is concerned. But Easter this year is extremely early, Darren, isn't it? So there won't be much young lamb on the market at the moment, and that, of course, is driving prices up as well.
Definitely. We probably see next week will probably be our busiest week for, say, for spring lambs, but you're looking at probably 2,000 lambs being processed. In the context of the overall kill, there'll be over 60,000 sheep killed. So a small, say, percentage where you'll probably see it is that you see a lot of butchers wanting to have spring lamb for the Easter trade, and then we'll see retailers as well that we'll want to maybe attract or entice customers into stores, say with lamb on the menu as well. Customers or consumers might not see, say, the increase in price that farmers are seeing might not be fully passed on to consumers, because we've seen in other years that retailers in particular, that they like to maybe have a promotion on legs of lamb, on hams, on, say, roast of beef for the Easter period. And I'd say that some of those could be used as a last leader to be competitive. Now, you probably will see, if it's to follow through in say, to the butcher sector or say, longer term, you will see a slight increase, so you will, in lamb prices, given just, I suppose, the scarcity in demand. And also, like, what's driving it at the moment is the supply-demand balance. There's insatiable demand right across Europe. In particular, the supplies are very tight in Britain. And we also have, I suppose, maybe a perfect storm for the, say, demand side, in that We had the start of the Islamic festival of Ramadan on the 10th of March. So that puts a boost into demand at a time when suppliers were already tight. We have Easter next week, and then we have Ramadan, the ending of Ramadan, coming quick on the 9th of April. So all across, say, different markets, they're all clamouring to get supplies for the different religious festivals, which is adding to us. And that has brought a huge increase as well, Jim, in the price of couliers. So we've seen couliers increase anywhere by 30 to 50 euros in the last week. Prices hit as high as 300 euros. Now, that's say, the extreme. But there's a lot of sheep, a lot of heavy couliers selling over 200 euros a head. And that's to have, I suppose, maybe the processors, those that are specialising in the ore trade, they're looking to have an alternative option to offer customers for hoggets or lamb that are more expensive. And we're seeing a lot of that cheap meat being exported into Britain, where there is a high, say, Islamic population, and right across Europe as well.
Okay. You have some good news then for small farmers this week with a proposal with regard to CAP inspections.
Yeah, I suppose the best way you call it is probably a sensible proposal, in that it cut out a lot of red tape, particularly in smaller farms. That one of the biggest things that we get back from doing meetings, or particularly over the last year, Jim, with the new CAP, the new CAP, it targeted this, or it said that it was going to reduce bureaucracy and red tape at farm level. And as your listeners will be well aware, as you're well aware yourself, the last 12 months has been a steep learning curve with all of the new schemes, with everything that's going on, and there has been a lot of stress at farm level. So this would, I suppose, it would be a welcome move. Anything that reduces, I suppose, the threat of inspections at farm levels, that even a farmer that is prepared to the best degree, there is still a bit of, I suppose, maybe caution or anxiety around inspections. It's the same way if you're driving down along the road and you have your tax, you have your insurance, you're going at the right speed limit, and you see a Garda checkpoint, you sort of say to yourself, Ginny, is Everton okay here? Even though Everton could be right. So for that cohort of farmers, it'd be, say, farmers with less than 10 hectares, it would bring in roughly just under 30,000 farms into that bracket. A lot of those farms will be in my neck of the woods up along the western seacoast. And it's a proposal that's been looked about. It mightn't come to pass, but it's a proposal that's on the table. And it's part of, I suppose, maybe this targeting CAP of reducing red tape and reducing maybe the threat of inspections. Now, the one thing that we haven't got back, and I'd be very interested in this, is that if they're reducing, say, inspections for those 30,000 farmers, and each year, depending on the scheme, you have to do between anywhere across schemes from 1% to 5% inspections. Does that now mean that 1% to 5% is calculated over the 130,000 farmers in the country, or is it now calculated over 100,000 farmers? Because while if it was good news for say, smaller farmers, we don't want a situation where it's benefiting one and then there's a higher threat. So that's something we're still waiting on to get some feedback on that.
Okay, and the final thing that you have in the journal then is the entitlements are selling up to 2.6 times their value.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interest in this at the moment. So the department have introduced an amnesty, a two-year amnesty, which was in place last year and this year, that anyone that sells entitlements without land, previous to that, there was a 20% clawback. So if you sold me 10 entitlements, Jim, two of those would be lost. That's going to be reintroduced in 2025. So there's a lot more interest in sales. Sales are going anywhere sort of from 2.1 to 2.6 times the value. But in general, sort of 2.2 to 2.4 times the value is looking after a lot of entitlements from around the national average base value, which would be 155 euros, up to over 300 euros. And then what we're seeing is some lower value entitlements are making maybe up to 2.5, 2.6 times their value, because there is an expectation there that those entitlements will appreciate in value and that there will be less risk for those going forward. We've seen convergence have reduced, is going to reduce, say, higher value entitlements significantly. So there is a bit more interest in those lower value entitlements at the moment. But still, while sales will be up, last year we've seen there was over 70,000 entitlements, say, sold. Leasing still remains the big ticket item, Jim. And I expect that there will be more entitlement sales this year, but leasing is still, I suppose, the dominant. And if we have a second, just maybe to look at the price of that. So generally, entitlements around the national average value, 155, your, say, unit value. If you were the owner leasing them to me, I would be giving you back somewhere between 45 and 50% of the value. Mm-hmm. If there were lower value entitlements down around, say, the minimum value for 110, 120, I'd only be giving you back somewhere between 30 and 40% of the value. And then if there were very high value entitlements, which there isn't a huge amount trading, but say 280 to upwards of 300 euros unit value, somewhere between 52% and 60% I'd be giving you back.
Right, okay. All very interesting. Look, thanks very much for taking a call from me this morning. That listener was Darren Carty, who is the Sheep and Schemes Editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. Listeners, as I said at the beginning of the programme, my final guest this morning would be Bernard Lennon from Clonmel, or Marfield to be more correct. And Bernard is on this time every year just telling me how things are getting on, particularly with regards to the growing of vegetables and the planting of trees and how Marfield itself is looking and what's being done there. So this is an update and how things are going for 2024. And we do know that trying to get in vegetables this year has been extremely challenging. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Getting in vegetables has been challenging, hasn't it?
They have been more than challenging, Jim. To be honest with you, the ground is still sopping and it hasn't opened up fully yet with growth. Mm. Like, once the growth starts, the moisture seems to disappear out of the ground. The mm-hmm. nature growing pulls the moisture. But at the moment, it's tough going, Jim. It's tough going.
Right. Right. But, well, as we all know, you know, if you are putting in a few spuds in your plot, whether that's in an allotment or someplace in the back of the house, St. Patrick's Day was the day to, traditional day to plant, wasn't it?
Traditional day to plant, and it's probably a day to take out the shovel and clean it rather than planting because of the way the weather had gone. However, there's kind of a new kid on the block now that's after arriving, and it's becoming quite popular, which is planting in containers.
Mm-hmm.
And modern, how would you say, modern trade and commerce gives us lots of containers. And one of the big ones that I've discovered to myself is the fact that everything comes in a bag or a box or some sort of a container. And as luck would have it, I've been buying timber over the year for the fires because with the demise of the briquettes, timber is the next natural resource we have, which is a renewable one. And the small bags that the blocks come into, they fold down nicely. You put a little bit of timber in the bottom to keep them stiff so as they don't fold in. And 2 to 3 scoops of compost, make up your own mix, plant your spud, and they'll grow. And I haven't grown here, Jim. The back of my house, I haven't grown.
Right. Good tip for anybody who wants to, who has a few of these bags left around. Get a bit of seed potato. Interesting that you should do that. Last year, I grew all my early potatoes in tubs.
It's the way to it. And it allows you to control both the moisture content because you can raise them off the ground if necessary.
Yeah.
And along with that, Jim, you're doing it at home instead of, you know, as us gentler folk come into more advancing years. we do find the challenge of digging has become a challenge in itself.
Well, I'll agree with you 100% there. I went digging myself last week and did in the back. So I'm, it's better again now. So hopefully the weather's going to take up now. It's about time it did. And, well, to get out and get all these vegetables that we need for our households. And there is, you know, great therapy in growing your own.
It's good. Somehow or other, your own potato tastes nice. You can be very sure of its progeny because you know that you didn't either add or subtract from the potato. And, you know, there's so much seed available. They're available now in small handy packets. A variety of seed that's available is bewildering. Everything from, Duke of York to Roosters to Sepermuters. You can name it. It's take your pick and read up on them, and they all have different pluses and minuses.
Of course.
And you get very good at reading them, and of course you can hold a great conversation about them. You might plant a dozen of them, but you can hold a conversation, nevertheless.
You can, of
course. It's an introduction to gardening. In the allotments, Jim, we're busy. We're starting at them. It's basically a clean-up time. It's a time of attending to the whatever little bit of fencing we have there, or boundary marking, pulling the weeds, just getting ready. Like, now is the time for to be setting the onion sets and the potatoes and the early ones. And with a bit of luck, once this week is past, the worst of the frost, or the likelihoods of frost, will be gone. And once the long day comes in, we've got that extra bit of sunlight, and we're now we're gone past the equinox, so we're doing quite well, and we look forward to it, Jim, and we're forever hopeful. And our allotments group are going well. We've 66 allotments, Jim, which is quite an amount, and it's been a highly successful undertaking, and, you know, take about Tipperary County Council, because it's something that was needed in the town. It's a marvellous social meeting place. Mm-hmm. Like, the amount of experts you have on vegetables in that, Jim, is bewildering. Everyone knows how to grow carrots and where not to grow them. We know about carrot fly, we know about plice. It's a thing that was missing in many ways, in that our towns have got exceptionally removed from the country. And the nearest people come to vegetables who had to see in a plastic bag. So, it's good. It's good.
It is.
It makes you feel good.
And it's something that should be in every Tipperary town, to be honest with you, an allotment area, to allow people to grow their own if they are that way inclined. Anyway, what's happening out in the village?
In the village, we have a number of things. First of all, now, next Tuesday night, the 26th, from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m, there's a county council, Tipperary County Council, are making a presentation in the Clonmel Talbot Hotel there, just off the Care Road, the Poppy Fields. And it's going to be on Narrowfield Lake, and the options that they're looking at and to deal with the issues that have arisen to deal with the lake. And there's two of the options which are quite, thought-provoking. One option, of course, is to strengthen the dam, which is constructed in the mid-1700s and really hasn't been touched since, which is a credit to the builders. It just needs a bit of management, and particularly on the management of the water levels in the lake. And the second option, Jim, wait till you hear this, they're thinking of lowering the lake and getting rid of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the words a lot of people are saying. So I have a feeling that that's a lead balloon before it starts, I think. Because we have lots of birds, it's a special area of conservation. It's 16 and a half acres or thereabouts, depending on how you measure it, which is quite an amount of water and quite an amount of a nature reserve. And to have such a nature reserve within walking distance, within a kilometre of the town, something else. You know, you don't get that in many towns. And we're very proud of it and very protective of it.
Right.
What comes out of it. And my advice to everybody who has any interest is turn up, have a look, see what they say. Yeah. Don't come in with any preconceived ideas. Listen to what they're saying first and then draw your own conclusions. And if necessary, make your own submissions. Now, the village committee will, naturally enough, we will be attending to have a really good look at it. But that's it. On the 26th of March, that's next Tuesday night, from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m., the Talbot Hotel. That's where to be.
Okay, very interesting. Oh. I believe you're planting some trees out there as well.
Yeah, we planted our memorial grove in the last few days, Jim. Now, the memorial grove is something I submitted to Pobble, which are based in Clifton in County Galway. Now, they're a government body which sponsors communities. And I made the pitch in that we have nothing where we can, you know, remember people who have been in the village, people who worked in the village, who lived in it, or maybe their parents maybe live somewhere else, and they're just living there now. So the idea was a memorial grove, 12 trees, one for each month of the year. And we're hopeful then at the end of the year we'll have a blessing service and some prayers said there, which be, you know, remember that that's where the monks were, down on the banks of the shore, because when you look out from Sandy Banks below, you're looking out at one of the weirs that the monks constructed. Now, they found the river.
Yeah.
We haven't done that for years. Mm-hmm. They had fish ponds.
Yeah.
And they would have found the river like today we found grassland.
Mm-hmm.
And they're highly skilled at it, and for a number of reasons. One of them, of course, was religious reasons, that fish didn't come into the equation like beef did or meats in Lent. And the monks really, really understood how to manage them. And it's an area where when you stand there, if you cast your mind back in time, you were probably there when a monk stood at some stage. So it's just a bit walking. And the line goes back nearly 1,000 years.
Look at great work. Look at, we're out of time, but I want to thank you ever so much for
just one other thing, Jim.
Yes.
On next on the 1st of April, which is Easter Monday, we have a Rounders in Marlefield, a game that hasn't been played in this part of the county and hasn't been played in much of the county for many, many years. But as a young fellow going to school, Jim, you probably played it.
We all did.
The Marlefield GA Club are playing Rounders, a family fun day on the 1st of April, and starts at 2:30 p.m. in the Marlefield GA Club. Everyone is welcome. Come down, look, see. A game for everybody, male, female, mixed teams, old and young.
Okay, look, you're absolutely great for doing things down there. And thanks for bringing me up to speed and what's happening and what's been grown and what's been sowed and what might be removed in your particular area.
That and something for the young and the old.
Okay, that listeners was Bernard Lennon. That listeners is AgriPort for this week. Before I go, I would like to say a big thank you to my guests. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon de Wire presents Down Your Way.